views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today, we are going to be talking about nanotechnology and how it's fundamentally changing the world. What we thought was impossible 20 years ago, we are now finding out that it's possible with nanotechnology. It's really amazing how many new inventions and how many industries are being transformed with this new world of technology. Many researchers and engineers and business executives believe that over the next 5 years, we'll have more inventions, mostly due to nanotechnology, than we had over the last 100 years. You know, the only thing you can really compare it to is maybe the invention of the wheel or the industrial age that was brought on by the printing press, or maybe even the internet. The internet, we're still experiencing. We're probably in the early stages of experiencing what the changes will bring on because of the internet and the huge amount of communications we can have now. But before we even get through the maturity of that, we're starting a whole nother huge disruption with nanotechnology that will be on par or even more so than the internet. It will be absolutely amazing. I am going to bring on a guest. Before I get too much into what nanotechnology is, I want him to explain it and talk about what the future of nanotechnology is. He is the CEO and chairman of NanoMech. His name is James M. Phillips. He leads one of the world's top nanotechnology companies. His firm works with the Department of Defense, the U.S. Army, and the world's leading space, energy, and manufacturing companies. Most of his work that he does for these companies are top secret and cannot be shared, or it's proprietary with the different manufacturers. But he is going to share some really interesting stuff. Besides explaining what nanotechnology is, he's going to talk about what we can do now, what the future is going to hold. And he's also going to share his new contract that he landed with the Army to develop their new armor and what's going to go into that. And he's going to talk about some interesting fun things like how we can create futuristic aircraft that can turn on a dime and go possibly even faster than the speed of light. Very, very fun stuff. So without going more into this, because I want to dive right into this interview, let's welcome James Phillips to the program. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be here, Sarah.
Well, I'm so excited to have you on because you're one of the main players in the nanotechnology field. And I wanted to get you on to ask you questions about what it is so we can get a baseline for our listeners. But I want to talk about what's possible now and what's possible in the future and where you see the whole industry going. So let's start with what is nanotechnology?
Well, it's a metric. A lot of people think it's a bunch of little really super tiny cootie bugs sort of running around, and it couldn't be further from the truth. What it is scale. And in the world of manufacturing, everything's determined by scale. So for the longest time, we built at a scale of a foot, and then it went down to an inch, and now micron scale. And today, it's nanoscale. And that allows you to make things far better, far more durable, last longer, and do more things. It gives them multiple applications that we never enjoyed before. So it's a billionth of a meter. And so at that scale, you're talking about, 100,000 times smaller than the thickness of a piece of paper.
That's small. So basically, nanotechnology just means super small technology.
Well, it's better than that. Small is the new big when it comes to manufacturing, to the extent that we can really make anything better. All the problems left in manufacturing worldwide are at nanoscale. And that means all the solutions are also at nanoscale. And all your manufacturers, all your big manufacturers know that. In fact, we've reached a moon race where all the major countries know that their GDP, their future, is determined by manufacturing at nanoscale. And to that extent, you know, we're in a moon race with people like China. They have a thing called the Nanopolis, and that's like 130 acres. And that's not for R&D. That's really for commercialization. And so they're coming after us. And we created a thing called the National Nanotechnology Initiative a few years back, and over the last 10 years have spent about $22 billion as a country to really push it forward, because everything you manufacture, number one, kind of determines, you know, how great a country you are and what you can do for the people in that country. But it also means national security, because anything that can be manufactured also can be weaponized. So nanoscale is beyond question, not only the next big thing, but maybe even beyond that, big thing.
It's in virtually every sector of our economy. Something that small, what are we paying? Do we have all the resources to do what we can? I mean, how small can we get?
That's the beauty of this technology is while we're at nanoscale now, we can go to what's called femto nanoscale. So we're at a billionth of a meter. We can start working at a trillionth of a meter. It's literally an infinite space. And, you know, many scientists, Nobel Prize winners included, like Smalley and so forth, recognized early on that, as one of the most famous scientists said, you know, there's a lot of room down there. Meaning, you know, we're trying to get to Mars today. We've got these telescopes, Hubble telescopes and so forth, that look out and you can see that space is infinite. So if you go, you know, 100 million and you go 2x, so you're, you know, 200 million miles, 400 million miles, billion, you know, whatever, you know, it's infinite. And it's no different going down. So if you put your hand out and it's at 4 feet and you divide by two and you stand in that place for a million years, you still will not hit the floor because you're continuing to divide. And as you go down in scale and you start looking at it through electron microscopes and things like that, you realize there are complete universes between that, where you're holding your hand up at 4 feet and hitting the floor. And inside those universes, as you adapt that to materials and downsizing materials, you take the, you know, periodic table and basically create a three-dimensional periodic table, which means you can make millions of new types of materials that have completely different behavior characteristics, take on different properties, and that means we can make things stronger, lighter, better, last a lot longer, but we can put new colors in them. We can do all kinds of things in terms of their geometries, their shapes, and it leads to really thousands of other things that would be considered what's next, whether it's flying saucers or what have you.
Well, and it's even can get below the nuclear level, right? The atom level.
Yeah, you're talking in angstrom. And so, yes, I mean, we can build it sub-angstrom. We can build it, because now the apparatus exists. You know, there was a lot of nano talk of 10, 15, 20 years ago, and it was before all the apparatus and before the universities had caught up and the laboratories had caught up to the extent that we had, you know, the tools, the apparatus to build at nanoscale. And now we have that. And to that extent, it's impacting the economy in a big way, to the extent that if you're not operating at nanoscale and you're a major manufacturer, you're not going to be competitive. It is truly in the zone of innovate or die. And it represents already, you know, over $1 trillion of enabling products and billions of dollars worth of just pure nanotechnology products that are being sold. But, you know, if you look at all the projections, and you can find lots of them out there, but it's going to move into the trillions very, very fast. So it's going to affect everything that's manufactured, whether it's regardless of the material and regardless of industry. So, you know, right now in transportation, all your lubricants, everything to do with that, gas, fuel, everything is moving into nanoscience to make it better. If you look at things like the aerospace industry, you know, the things you're able to do to, in the future, even create adaptive wings, more like bird wings and stuff, and take out all the turbulence and, you know, increased gas mileage, and then the coatings and things that come with that. All your coatings industry companies are changing this to this because it takes the coatings that you're trying to put on whatever the material may be, and you know, it may be super light material like aluminum, but with those coatings, it becomes nearly indestructible, and it gives all kinds of great new operating characteristics and so forth to those things. So already it's in coatings, it's in lubricants, it's in finishes, it's moving into the clothes in a very fast way to create clothes that last longer, look better, fit better, don't stretch, and
aren't messed up when you wash it.
I'm sorry?
They don't get messed up when you wash it.
Well, you'll be able to, it'll last a lot longer. You can have a lot more washings. And yeah, I want to stretch and deform and do things like that. We won recently the contract to develop the next generation Army combat uniform. And what we can do is, among other things, antimicrobial, antibacterial, antifungal, antimold, antimildew, antiodor, which is really important because you can
That's incredible.
Literally smell a soldier, you know, 2 miles upwind these days with the sensors. And by the way, the sensors are all nano enabled, but then fireproof, not fire resistant, and also super hydrophobic, meaning it's got properties to shed water, yet breathe really well and not increase the weight and maintain what's called in the textile industry the same hand, which is to the average guy the same feel of the fabric. And it takes out, when you're using nanotechnology, one of the great things about it is it also allows you to take out a lot of the harsh chemicals that we've used for years that really are bad. Like if you're trying to make it fire resistant or fireproof, they use bromine. Bromine can eat up an entire sewing machine in a matter of months. And you don't want that on your skin at the end of the day, but that's all that's pretty much used today. And so we take all the bromine out. We replace it with a totally different substance that's very harmless, but at the end of the day, it gives you far better properties for fire resistance. So,
well, if you have to be stuck in a uniform for a week because you're fighting a battle, you got to get all the stuff that's going to create rashes and all the things that, you know,
yeah.
You're talking smell and odor, but there's also problems with rashes and disease that can happen from that, right?
Well, they get dirty and they have all kinds of problems from that standpoint. And yeah, this fixes that. And it can also make the body armor incredibly lighter. It can make the uniform multifunctional. You can add, you know, at nanoscale, all kinds of electronics. I mean, you're going to have uniforms that literally are cellular to the extent that, you know, if you have body armor on and it gets shot, it's going to still put a hole through that somehow. And you can take a lightweight nanostructured component, plug it in, and just keep going. So it'll also, if it does get through and it senses that there's blood right there, it can put in an anticoagulant so you'll stop bleeding. And it can also put in some medicine so that like an antibiotic of some type right to that spot all automatically.
So, oh, how interesting. So your body suit's like a computer that at the nanoscale can fix you or do some basic medical procedures so that you won't get infections and you can keep going.
Absolutely. It can even make it mobile to that extent. So really anything that's built, you can build better at nanoscale because at that scale, you're able to introduce all kinds of multiple applications into that material, whatever that material is. And so, you know, we're seeing overnight, you know, you hear 3D printing. Well, you know, solutions that's used in 3D printing, and if you're going to make it super strong and you're going to put it on an aircraft or whatever, then you better have a solution that's really phenomenal that goes into the 3D printing machine or even the printers themselves and how they operate. A lot of nanoscale components in that, for instance. So when you get into medicine, people say today, if you can live 20 more years, you'll probably live to be 120, 110, 115, whatever. But the reason being is DNA, at the DNA level, at the chromosome level, using nanoscience and so forth, we're able to get into the chromosome level. If you have a chromosome defect, what have you, you'll be able to manipulate down at the molecular level. So health is going to change probably more than anything else in terms of the ability to operate at that kind of scale. And you know, things like, today when you have cancer, obviously the treatments that we've had today, chemotherapy and so forth, have been fantastic. They've saved a lot of lives, but it's been obviously miserable. A few years out, that's
going to
look like bloodletting. That's going
to
look like bloodletting from the 1700s, because what you're going to have is the ability at nanoscale to put in literally what are called nanobots, They're inert, which means they'll exit the system, no problem, and they'll be able to go right to the tumor, fix the tumor, and then get out. And so that, as crazy as that sounds, that's happening so fast and moving so fast through the system that when I say the system, I mean, you know, regulations, getting approvals, things like that. In agriculture, we'll be able to make super plants. We'll be able to remineralize, you know, over-harvested croplands by introducing nanotechnology into that
into
situation.
The soil? So we can rebuild the organic material
Rebuild the soil very easily. And so that's going to happen. Already, I mean, you have these microchips. You see, you hear about paralyzed people and with their arms and so forth. That's all at nanoscale. All the new implants that are revolutionizing the treatment of many of those medical conditions are now, you know, because you've got these literally nanoscale, you know, like neural bridges and things like that, that stimulate the muscles according to the brain pattern. So that's already out there, already going in to repair things like that, moving towards even repairing severed spinal cords. And then drones, you know, all you hear about today are, you know, of course, autonomous vehicles, drones, and so forth. Well, guess what's behind all of that? In order to make these work, to make these last longer, and to make these to where they're more durable, they can fly when they land, they don't just break, and at the same time, lube them, which we do. We have like what's called drone oil, and it's the best in the world. There's nothing that even comes close to it. And those are completely driven by a lot of nanoscale technology and engineering. So your autonomous vehicles, you know, are driven by two things that are new. One is AI, and the other would be nanoscience, nanoengineering, that allows, you know, that to happen in a big way. So all these great new inventions you're hearing about, embedded in it, behind all of that, you know, are obviously, you know, principles of nanotechnology, nanostructure, nanoengineering, nanocomposites, nanochemistry, stuff like that.
Okay.
And
well,
then as you move.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, can we eventually do what you see on Star Trek where the thing just creates the food that you want? So can we create a different chemical compound on the fly and print out? I mean, eventually, in theory, we should be able to change and create the chemical compound we want, put the structure together, and then print it out.
Combinatorial chemistry is just incredibly better at nanoscale. We do it all the time. We make, like, among other things, you know, for cutting tools. The world runs on machines. Machines run on two things, lubricants, and they also have to be cut, and two very tight tolerances and so forth. So we use combinatorial chemistries. All this is heavily, heavily patented, but to put a just real small layer, you can't even see it, on a cutting tool, and it can last as much as 10 times longer. You can have a nano serrated edge. You don't even see it, feel it, but it gives a far better finish. So, you know, and this builds jet engines. We do a lot of the jet engines, or most of the jet engines, through partners using this type of technology to create the better, lighter, you know, more perfected jet engines. But it can be used for cutting virtually anything or any type of machine. To make a machine better and that has moving parts, and they almost always do, obviously, you know, you need to get down to really tight tolerances, extreme pressure. And in order to do that and to make those kind of cuts and then to lube that so that it works really, really well, and can take that kind of extreme pressure and basically reduce the friction down to near zero. And we do all of that with our lubes, also with our cutting tools. So yes, absolutely. That's why you're able to build better machines, and you're able to also build lighter machines. And we get involved in that to create super coatings for, you know, like aluminized body parts for cars, trucks, planes, and things like that that have to be shaped. And in order to shape those, you have to do a thing called superplasticity body forming. That means you have to heat them up and everything, and then you have to press them or stamp them or whatever into the place that you want. It has to be absolutely precise. Well, in order to do that without, when you're stretching aluminum and things like that and materials like that, you know, our lube that's a dry lube that we spray on that, you know, allows you to stretch it without tearing it or ripping it or deforming it in the wrong way. So, you know, that and a thousand other things are all being changed right this minute across the world. Your eyeglasses, if you've got reading glasses, eyeglasses, and you say, you know, I want the anti-scratch, that's nanotechnology. And that's been around about 10 years and it just gets better and better. But it's super thin. It's you have no idea it's there, but it's amazingly strong, scratch resistant. So product after product after product are now moving to nanoscale.
Well, okay, let's get really futuristic with this stuff. We can come up with, because new energy is at the nanoscale when we're starting to manipulate
electrons and at the zero point energy field and things, and they're finding new ways to get to energy and maybe even travel faster than the speed of light and things like that with, I don't know if scalar waves are real or not, but that's a new theory. All of this stuff is nanotechnology, isn't it?
Oh yeah. No, it's, you know, you've got to have, again, you got to have the coatings, the materials, the lubricants. I mean, the world in manufacturing is all about material science. And at the end of the day, you know, that's driven by, you know, a combination of other sciences like mechanical engineering, chemistry, and so forth. And so this interdisciplinary world in every one of those cases are operating now at nanoscale to create these new materials that allow you to get performance and do the things that you're talking about all the way down to your chips. I mean, all your chips have moved, you know, years ago and continuing to down to nanoscale, whether it's the coating of the chip or whatever to decrease the heat, to increase the speed and so forth. And we can get really scientific on these things. I mean, it gets into things like macromolecular, macrostructured, macrocomposite, but, you know, just keeping it simple, it allows you to operate at that scale down there where you can begin to do things that are called biomimicry. And that's really important. You know, some people look at it as, you know, God invented everything and man discovers God's inventions. Or some people look at it as Mother Nature invented everything. I happen to look at it as God invented everything and we just discover his, hers invention, whatever. But, you know, the fact is that is all down at an incredible scale. And we're at that scale now, what a lot of people call at the God level, being able to operate. So we look at things like that exists already that were made by nature, made by God. And so if you take a chameleon, for instance, you know, how does that thing turn colors? I mean, everybody is fascinated by it. And so if you look at it as just a kid, you're blown away by, you know, you put your green sunglasses on it and it turns green. You put your red, it turns red and it adapts to those colors. Well, when you start to look at it under microscopes and electron microscopes, and you look at the skin structure, you start seeing a translucent cellular structure there that can be duplicated and then replicated.
See, that's so cool.
Nanostructure, and which means, you know, in the future, count on it, not that far off. If you like your car red tonight, it's red, but then you put an electrode up to it, tomorrow it's blue, the next day it's green. You know, no different than a chameleon. If a chameleon can do it, we can do it. It's no different than flying. You know, flying.
How about regrowing today? Arms? You know, because some of those animals can regrow their tails or regrow their whatever. That I know that's another step in the future, but that would be something we could figure out.
Well, you know, you're seeing it already with, you know, the
regrowing
artificial
limbs, organs,
and so forth. And to the $6 million man from 30, 40 years ago, I mean, a lot of stuff we implant and the things we do are actually better than the original, which are stronger or what have you. I mean, it's no different than when you get certain eye conditions and they have implants now for the eye. That's an everyday thing now. In the future, those eye implants to take and repair your eyes as you grow older, people talk about, I've never seen this well. I've never seen this good. That's because at nanoscale, we're able to do things to put literally chips into, in effect, lenses and so forth, implant them into the eyes and make them even better. So all those things are possible now, whether it's new hearing devices, what have you, is because, and I'm keeping this simple, we could go tech here real quick, but a deep dive, but it's because we're able to, at that very, very, very tiny scale where everything's basically now being able to be manipulated molecule by molecule because of this new technology, we can usher in these incredible inventions. The fact is that it is a great time to be alive. The patent officer back in the turn of the century, 1900s, came out and said, this is famous, but he said, everything that will be invented has already been invented. We can close the patent office. You know,
yeah.
That was the really first statement. Okay.
Really was.
People think like that. But then, you know, fast forward and, you know, you got the 70s and it was said out of the patent office that, oh my gosh, you know, more will be invented over the next 100 years than in the history of mankind. Now, fast forward to today, and everybody in science will tell you more will be invented in the next 5 years than in the history of mankind. And a lot of that is because we're down now operating at nanoscale. It's moved from concept to totally refined, totally perfected technology, the ability to manipulate with the new apparatus, you know, through all this new microscopy that allows us to do these things, whether it's on the medical side, in terms of surgery. To a great extent, the Da Vinci, the robot that does the surgery, you think that's great? Go out 5 years and see how we're using robots and nanotechnology to make a non-invasive surgical procedure. And some of it's going to be done with mechanical, and some's going to be done with photonic, you know, lights and things like that. And so it's all being enabled because we're able to deal at this, you know, far smaller scale that gives a more complex, but in most respects, very simple approach to fixing these things. And then don't forget biomimicry. You know, every day we're learning new things. I mean, people are studying giraffes right now because, you know, you know what the greatest cause of death in the world is?
What is that?
It's not cancer. It's sleep. We sleep 8 hours. That's a third of our life. Well, the giraffe, you know, has got to always be on guard, right? So they sleep an average of 30 minutes a day, and they're fine. And they never sleep hardly any longer than 5 minutes.
Wow.
Well, looking at that chemistry, studying that chemistry, I mean, wouldn't it be great if you could get completely nourished with 2 hours sleep?
And yeah, then, why? You know, how are they doing that? Because,
yeah,
I mean, don't we need that time to restructure our brain? I mean, people are theorizing why we even need that time.
if a giraffe can do it, a human can do it. It's no different than the bear. Hibernation. Look at hibernation. What's going on? You know, a bear during hibernation, 6 months, right? And you know, sometimes longer, sometimes a little bit shorter. It drops its heartbeat from 300 beats to about 3 beats a minute. It goes to shivers. It actually gets colder. The shivers keeps away the atrophy, so it doesn't atrophy. Wakes up, has perfect memory, perfect muscle tone, walks out of the cave, doesn't take a right and drop off 600 feet, remembers and goes left and goes down to the valley, eats and gets fatter. Now, what can that be used for? If you study the chemistry at nanoscale, the facts are that, you know, it can lead to suspended animation. How do we go to Mars? How do we go beyond Mars? How do we put people in all what we see in the movies all the time in terms of suspended animation? Withdraw that chemistry that allows hibernation, that creates hibernation, study it, biomimic it, and turn it into a real product that becomes pharma, and presto, you know, you're into suspended animation. While you're studying it, by the way, the fact that you can put it to sleep like that, draw some of that chemistry out, inject it into a tumor, suddenly it's a cancer cure because it puts the tumor to sleep. It deactivates the tumor. Now, these are the kind of things that are being studied every day at nanoscale that, you know, are just some of the things that are going to lead to incredible inventions. Your aircraft, there's so much nano going into aircraft structure, coatings, lubricants, and things like that to make them safer, last longer, and so forth. But it's only going to get better. To the way they design the wings will be, you know, much more like the wings, which is crazy when you think about it. Leonardo da Vinci around 1500 was looking at wings all the time. He drew pictures of bat wings. He was into what created aviation even back then. But in order to biomimic those bat wings that give you incredible capabilities to turn and fly with incredible agility like a bat does and so forth. You study that at nanoscale, you learn that, and then you take the materials, you adapt that to the wings, and the next thing you know, you've got no more bumps when you're flying. You know,
and you can turn on a dime.
you can turn on a dime, and it reduces tremendously the cost of fuel because of that as well. So all of these things, that you could go for hours, but all of these things are being studied at our universities, at our national laboratories. And that's why we've got to protect our nanotechnology, too, because you've got this thing called cybersecurity. And, you know, I can tell you that other countries are looking at the U.S. is the most advanced nanoscience country in the world. And we're being looked at over the cybersecurity constantly all the time. We know because we look and we have great guards, you know, in terms of our firewalls. But, you know, even at NanoMech, our company, we see it all the time where people are trying. So we literally have to go off the grid on some of innovations to protect them at this point. But cybersecurity will probably, at the end of the day, when we figure out how to protect and create true private communications, regardless of what country you're talking about, will be a nanoscale invention.
That is just so incredible. What I'm excited about with this industry is we need something big like this, which this is, to really reinvigorate our economy and to really get us into a different, it's like the Industrial Revolution.
It is. It's going to create millions of new jobs. It already is creating thousands upon thousands of new jobs. And what it is, keep in mind what it is. Now, is it an industry? Sort of,
it's
kind
not
of,
really.
Kind of
it's
not.
Everything.
You know, what it is
yeah.
is a new approach innovation to everything. So this interdisciplinary, whether you're in chemistry, biology, you know, material science, mechanical engineering, whatever, you're looking at this so that you can create new summits, new, you know, highways that last longer, that
and
adapt.
And integrate it all with computing.
You've got to integrate everything to computing, because now that you can operate at this level, you know, it brings in big data, because big data can do the analysis, do the projections, do the simulations and so forth at these kind of scales. And like you say, nanoscale, you know, billionth of a meter, that's really cool, but we can actually build even smaller than that. Now, the safety side of it, you know, through a lot of techniques and everything can be made very, very safe. We're proud we've won awards from EPA. So it can be incredibly safe. And like I said early on, you can actually reduce bad chemicals. Like in our lubricants, we take out a thing called ZDDP to a great extent, zinc phosphorus, and replace it with, of all things, canola oil grown from the ground. And we get a far better lubricant at the end of the day that outperforms these 20-year-old, 30-year-old. Lubricants haven't changed in almost 20, 30 years. And so this changes all that. So that's one of our biggest products is what we call Atom Oil and Atom Lube.
We need to take a short break, and we will be back with Jim Phillips in a moment. And we are back. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Business Game Changers. And I want to remind you that you can go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and you can see all sorts of interesting things there. About this episode, you will see examples of different and cool nanotechnology applications that are going on now or in the future, and links to different articles about that. I also have Jim Phillips' total bio link there as well. He has an incredible background. He has done a lot of amazing things as far as being a internet pioneer. He was very instrumental in the creation of instant messaging, the cable modem, the first handheld devices and PDAs. He was instrumental in fixed cellular and machine-to-machine communications for the wireless industry. He also was a pioneer in digital imagery with his company iPix, which was coined by Forbes as the Kodak of the internet. And he also won Time's Innovation of the Year for medical technology with VeinViewer. Now he's in nanotechnology. So this guy has an amazing resume and just really cool things that he's done. So let's get back to our interview with Jim Phillips.
And then, you know, corrosion. Corrosion eats away about 3% of our GDP every year. So it's hundreds of billions of dollars. You know, new products that just, you know, like trucks and trailers. So trucks and trailers, big industry for us that we involve. We've eradicated corrosion, and we have a very safe spray or, you know, you can brush it on, what have you, that totally stops corrosion, stops the rust, independent of what type chemicals are out there on it. And then electrification.
Well, you know, cars, if you could stop getting rust, that would be incredible.
We've done it. We do it all the time for major, you know, I'm not dropping the names, but for major truck lines, the biggest in the world.
They got to put it on regular cars so that when you're in the Midwest and you're up to your eyeballs in snow and salt, that your cars won't rust.
Our undercoatings for cars, for trucks, are so beyond anything that is put on today. It's the stuff that's put on today is almost like a paint, and it's not going to last. Ours are so beyond that because, again, we operate at nanoscale. There's a word called asperity, so it's the imperfections of any kind of metal surface. We get into those surfaces. That's where your rust starts. So for trucks, for thousands and thousands of trucks, their wheels, they're all, you know, actually millions of trucks are having the problem, but for thousands and thousands already, we are fixing that. Where when our paint sprayed on those wheels, or our clear protect, and even on aluminum, you're not going to rust. You're just not going to rust. So we eradicate that rust, which is a huge issue in terms of wear. It's also a big safety issue. So we fix that with a product we call GuardX. And we work with all the major companies from, you know, the automotive the new companies that are coming out like Tesla. We do a lot with Tesla in terms of both the lubricants, because they go at incredible fast speeds, very, very quick, and there's a lot of friction, a lot of things.
Do you work with SpaceX, too, to help with their materials?
We work with a number of companies in terms of
NASA.
Space and satellites and so forth. A lot of these are under, as you can imagine, non-disclosures, because these are and we're hired constantly
by
large companies to do special projects that make them more competitive at the end of the day, hugely more competitive.
Sure, so they don't want to talk about it. Yeah.
Is at NDA, but we're approached every day by major Fortune 100, Fortune 500, and some aspiring young companies, I mean, like Tesla, to, hey, fix this, fix this, fix that.
Well, and the young companies are going to be the big companies later, because we know that the lifespan of Fortune 100 companies are nowhere near as long as it used to be. We're talking 15, 20 years, everything turns over. The companies that are ahead of that curve, who is in the Fortune 100, and they know that they need to innovate on a constant scale or constant basis, they'll stay alive. But a lot of those companies won't be alive, and these younger upstarts are going to take them over.
That's right. And it's got to be really good science. It's got to be very science-backed. One thing we do is we have a slew of PhDs that have been from day one. We've groomed them in here over a period of 15 years to really understand the nanoscience solution and innovations and how we can apply that to productize it and turn it into products. And, you know, early 20 years ago, 15 years ago, nano was almost just a concept, and now it's moved fast forward for a couple of reasons. Number one, the universities, the national labs in the United States, and for that matter, worldwide, have realized this really works. The apparatus to literally build at molecular scale and maneuver at molecular scale all exists now so that you can create these things. And then the ability to create assembly lines with quality control, repeatability, scalability, so that you can build this on a worldwide basis, move it around. And the IP, the patent office, has really gotten up on what is real and what's not. And so we've got literally hundreds and hundreds of patents and claims and so forth to protect what we invent. And so it has matured now as an industry to where it's literally every day and everywhere. But, you know, just 15 years ago, you know, a lot of things were just called nano. They weren't, you had a nano car, you had the nano iPod, you had,
they didn't
so many
get
things
it
like that.
We didn't
no,
get
well,
it.
Well, they used it.
But I mean,
as
marketing didn't.
No, I want to make a point of that. They did get it. They used it as hype, you know, to hype
sure.
something and advertise. And then people would say, ah, nano, it's not nothing. But in the meantime, in the labs, in the universities, in companies like ours that are really serious, very sober, and are backed by incredible science and scientists and engineers, that really took the time and built these things to operate and literally never fail. I don't believe ever lost a customer. All our customers are repeat customers, because one of the things you get with it, you know, this durability, this quality and so forth, is it lasts longer. And that's one of the reasons we work with the military.
It's a paradigm change too.
It's a sea change.
Okay. Yeah. So let me, I don't think the general public is up to speed on this by any stretch. That's what I mean by people don't get it. They really don't. You know what I'm saying? The average person is just not up to speed. But let's talk about how this is a whole paradigm change, and it's a whole new tool set. It's almost like the wheel or the printing press when it came out, or even the internet itself, right? It's that whole, it's a big deal. It's a whole paradigm change. It's a new way of thinking. It's a whole new set of toolkits.
You got to compare it to the greatest invention of all forever. The greatest invention to date is the internet. There's nothing that beats the internet. You know, this led to the Internet of Things and so forth. But I would say it's right there, right next to it.
Well, you know how the printing press completely changed society?
Yeah.
And the internet's the printing press on steroids. And it allows this to happen. It's incredible.
I see three revolutions out there in you know, looking back. I mean, you had the Industrial Revolution, which was real, the machine, and then the assembly lines, and that changed everything. Then you had the Digital Revolution, where, you know, it digitally re-architected everything, and you went from, you know, brick to click to pure, almost just pure click. And that's still inside the revolution in that it's changing things incredibly fast. And then the next revolution really is this nanoscale ability to build anything and build it differently and build it better. And then you combine that with some other new technologies like big data, AI, and so forth. And suddenly you're into a whole new generation that's going to accelerate invention and innovation at a speed we've never seen before. Now,
with the internet, with the communication allowing between scientists and engineers and the thoughts, I mean, that's huge. That goes in conjunction with this. I mean, the ability for this to explode. Because if this was in kind of an isolated thing, it wouldn't explode like it will because of the internet.
Right. There's nothing isolated about this. The beauty of this is that the, you know, our, in our country, but also in all the other countries, they recognize that if you could build it to scale, it's going to open up so many new worlds of
innovation. We don't even know yet. It's like the writing itself or mathematics itself, right?
Well, okay, when you start getting into biomimicry, where you can take basically anything of nature, you know, right down to the leaves, and they're incredibly water resistant, and you figure out how to create a new super hydrophobic that's super inexpensive, breathes well. I mean, all those things are happening right now.
Okay. Now I got some bigger thoughts. Okay.
Okay.
Like when the printing press came out, there was, you remember at the competitive council when I brought up the ethical questions of the genome, editing the human genome, and the energy in the room just really raised, and it was kind of a good question for the end of the day. But okay, so we're becoming a lot more powerful with this stuff. And when the printing press came out, there were countries that were afraid, and there are countries that embraced it. And the countries that embraced it are still seeing financial rewards today. The countries that didn't embrace it are behind financially. There's an economic difference that can be measured, which is really crazy. Okay, so how do we embrace this? But, you know, when you start talking about the ethics, we're that much more powerful. How do we embrace this and don't shut down areas because of fear? You know, fear makes you not even be able to think objectively. So how do we embrace the things we need to embrace, but also be ethical and make sure there isn't evil being done? We don't plant little robots in every person so we can watch them and manipulate their thinking, or just, you know, things that we could really do because we're going to have a lot of powerful tools.
Well, okay, so on the ethical side, technology is a reflection of society. It always will be. And so, you know, the phone system today, you probably got 90% of all crime committed across the phone system, whether it's cellular, wireless, or wireline. You're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, you're going to figure out a way to interoperate inside that. So as you're able to invent new things, you know, there's going to always be the evil influence, the evil empire, whatever you want to call it, that's always out there. It's just human nature. And, you know, you have to deal with that, and you have to have certain regulations. They don't need to be overstretching to a point that they're limiting. But there's going to be ethical questions about any new type of invention. You know, if you make a better gun and the bad guy gets the gun, wow, you know,
now we're in trouble.
Yeah. Well, what you're doing right now, I mean, with nanotechnology, is you're beginning to see swarm technology come really fast. And so, you know, these are very, very, you know, nanobots that can fly, that can literally land on a power line, soak it up in terms of power, stay out in the field. And they're coming very, very fast, and they can be controlled. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if they're down, even if they're invisible, and I know that gets really scary real quick, but in the right hands, that's great, because, you know, in terms of collateral damage, you know, you drop a bomb, you gas, you nuclear, you do any of those kind of things, and you hurt a lot of people that they call it collateral damage. That's a euphemism. But, you know, with this, you could literally nick anybody. Say, think of a mosquito, think of millions of mosquitoes, all controlled and swarming in. There's no humans involved, and they're going after a target. And when they do, they nick them and they put them all to sleep. Well, when they wake up, some find themselves in Guantanamo and some find themselves back at home, and all the bad guys are gone. So that's ethically great. Now, in the wrong hands, you know, that's not a great thing. But we're headed towards that, you know, world. I mean, you've got in DNA research and things, you know, what's called CRISPR and so forth, which also gets down into nanoscale and then some things and so forth, where you can re-engineer literally humans. And to that extent, the bad guys, think North Korea, whatever, probably all over CRISPR right now, trying to create a army of Arnold Schwarzeneggers or what have
you. Or some Dr. Moreau in their island.
Yeah. So it's something that's got to be monitored. Something's got to be watched. And, you know, I have this, you know, good overcomes evil always. Sometimes it takes a little while, but, you know, you've got to pay attention to that. You can't ever get in front of your headlights or, you know, the cart in front of the horse when it comes to technology, to the extent that you do pay attention to the ethical sides of that as you roll that out. And then it's not going to always be perfect, so you're going to have to correct it sometimes post-invention, post-release in terms of products. But the 99% of what we're talking about in terms of nanotechnology today, what's coming out is going to benefit humans. It's going to benefit mankind. On the medical side, it's going to create cures of things that we never thought would ever get cured. It's going to extend lifespans. It's going to do incredibly wonderful things. And so we've got to, just like the phone system, I said again, crime committed 90% probably over phone system. You can't throw that phone system out because of that. You have to deal with that. So we are, it's always going to be a conflict. It's always going to be there. It's going to be something we're going to have to pay attention to. But what we want right now, if you've got somebody that's been paralyzed in an auto accident and you've got the ability to work at a scale to repair, you know, all the way down to the cells to create a, or reverse a severely injured spinal cord or whatever, you want that. You know, but that might be used for other things. And so you've got to also have certain controls in place. And we've had that, you know, it's called a speed limit. You know, I mean, you've got cars and they're on all the highways and you've got speed limits that are, you know, scientifically studied, you know, going at 75, going at 50 in this zone, going at 35, what have you. And some people break the rules and they get tickets. And some people, after they get enough tickets, they have their driver's license taken away. So, you know, there are going to have to be rules of this highway just like a normal
highway. So it's basically we need to figure out what the actual impact could realistically be. We need to be cognitive of that and mindful because, like, we've always had rocks that could kill each other. A knife can kill each other. Guns can kill each other, right? We've always had weapons of some kind, and you can weaponize almost anything. But when you get to the point, and you can't get rid of that, but when you get to the point where editing a human genome could actually change our whole species, you know, or we have something that could actually mess up the atmosphere, or just things that could actually fundamentally change for the worse forever. we need to go, okay, wait a minute now. This is something that we need to regulate and keep control of. This is fine. Let them run as much as they want on this stuff. But this is a little bit too dangerous. And so we still want to go forward, but we need to have some controls on it.
There's no doubt. I mean, you've got to do that, but you also can't get paralyzed by
exactly.
it. Because if you do, and again, look at the U.S. business model versus China. I mean, this is the way I look at it. You know, we're in trouble as a country right now. We are a welfare state. We're a debtor nation. How we got there, that's political talk. I'll save that for another conversation for you. But we're in that situation. China is a welfare state. The only difference is to get your welfare, they put you to work because they're not a democracy. They're a military dictatorship. And at the end of the day, they've got this incredible labor force and they go to work and they get paid and they actually are improving their lifestyle. Here, you can sit at home and get all the welfare you want. So we're both welfare nations, but one is out competing. And by the way, you ask the average American, you know, what percentage of the world population does the U.S. make up? And they'll say about 40%. Almost every time. and it's
Gosh.
Really only 5%.
But how
it's
can we be 5%. So uneducated?
So we're grossly outnumbered. And then, you know, we've got more regulations than any other country. You know, we've got the highest tax rates in our corporations, all of these things working all at once.
And how can you be competitive?
When we talk competitive, so we've got to make some adjustments in those areas because now it really is with the internet, which again, I said, greatest, you know, invention of all time to date. Okay. You have this great side of it where we can collaborate worldwide instantaneously and do things together and create the, you know, lovable village and all that. But at the end of the day too, it's a huge leveling. And with that leveling, it
Absolutely.
Means other countries are incredibly more competitive overnight. And so we've got to deal with these issues to where we can create for industry and for especially small companies who I love because they make up about 90% of the new jobs every year. But you've got to create an environment, an ecosystem where from a regulatory standpoint, we can compete. I had to speak to EPA one time about risk and I said, you cannot remove 100% of the risk. No risk, no reward. We heard that from elementary school days. And so you've got to find that balance and having the right people in politics that know how to find that balance as best as you can, realizing that you can't let perfect get in the way of good. We've heard that many, many times now. But where we can continue to build forward, build our ability to thrive and at least survive, because we're losing so much right now as a nation.
Well, that's why I brought up the printing press and the countries that embraced it are still financially ahead than the ones who didn't. And that's the same thing. You need to embrace things, but be smart and not let fear drive you. And you're right with the United States. I talk to people all the time. We have some sectors, we are really struggling in a lot of areas, and we want to control everybody. And China has what, 3 times the patents we have. I have a story and an article up on that. So they are running ahead of us. The only thing I think we still have on them with our patents and is our culture. We do have more of an open, for some reason, we're more cowboy. We're willing to go take it on and take on the challenges, and we're not as fearful of things. But people are catching up, and the world's changing, and we can't just rest.
No, we have the best universities. We have the best,
we do.
The best national labs. But one thing we're missing, I'm writing a book called Stranded. And what we've stranded is our intellectual property. The fact is that, we may pay the football coach $30 million a year, but what we invest in the tech transfer commercialization office is negligible. And to that extent, good people there, but, we have billions and billions coming in from the major agencies down. But by the time it gets to the professors and the really, really smart people that are out there, their ability to convert that into commercialization is very, very tough process. It needs to be changed. We need to revolutionize our tech transfer commercialization.
Absolutely.
Across the country. You hear about STEM constantly, and people think, oh, we're going to fit. That'll take 20 years. You know why? Because what caused the breakdown? This is in my book, but what caused the breakdown? Most people have no idea about this, but when I was going to school, and this ages me a little bit, but about 25 to 30 years ago, we had this thing called shop class. We also had this thing called home ec. Now, you look at shop class, more people discovered they had the aptitude to work with their hands, build things, do things, because they had those classes. And they became incredible mechanical engineers. They might be working in air conditioning, heating, electronics, electrification, things like that today. But we killed home ec, shop class around the country about 25 to 29 years ago because some lawyer somewhere said, hey, Johnny may cut his finger, and presto.
I know, that's stupid.
It happened.
I know,
it's worse than stupid. It was the destruction of the United States. And you go to Dow and DuPont and these great chemical BASF, and you're going to find 50 to 60-year-old women who, how did you get motivated to become a chemist? Because you're a world-class chemist. And they'll tell you it was home ec. I loved home ec because I built recipes. I used it's the same as chemistry. And then I took chemistry, and then I took biology and all that together. But what made it fun was home ec. And we took, they use blenders. Well, some lawyers somewhere, and it's not to pick on lawyers, okay? But somebody said, hey, Mike, cut yourself on that blender. And then it's over with. It's gone. And those disappeared. In the meantime, Germany, Japan, all these others.
But that's
infused.
The fear-based stuff that I'm talking about. It's not logical. As soon as you start mixing in fear, it screws up everything.
Well, it can. It absolutely can. Again, there's balance. And, but go look at your high schools today and find out if they've got home ec classes. Find out if they've got these shop classes where people learn that they have these incredible aptitudes. They're gone. And so, and then they're saying, okay, we now have to hire international. And you go to your universities and they're 65% manned in terms of their classes by foreign nationals.
Yes.
And that's okay. Those that come here that earn their master's
degree,
a visa stamp, a green card, immediately.
So they can stay.
We're sending back our Einsteins and Werner von Braun's, right after we subsidize their education, get them in here, have them fall in love with America, American democracy, and then we basically
push
them to another country. And because we have a terrible program in terms of visas, and that's all got to be fixed. So hopefully the new administration knows this, gets on top of it, and fixes all this.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, we have an avalanche of stuff coming. We have an avalanche of issues out there. We have an avalanche of really amazing stuff coming. It's just, how do we get enough educated, smart, well-meaning people in places of power to make things happen? And without it being paralysis.
Well, it starts with, it's how you eat an elephant, one bite at a time. A lot of people, it seems like when I look at Congress and so forth, they try to kind of do it all at once, and it never happens. But, I know that there's some great congressmen, senators up there, men and women who think this way and know that this is what we've got to do to get it fixed. And they will. I think at the end of the day, America, regardless of what side you're on, Democrat, Republican, or whatever, are going to figure this out. But it has been totally stopped by ridiculous reasoning or thinking. And for that reason, you know, we're educating all these incredible, immigrants and sending them home. And I see it. Look, in my company, I have a huge percentage of new Americans. I mean, you know, my great granddaddy or whatever. I mean, I'm an immigrant. We're all pretty much immigrants that came here. And we've got to figure out a really structured program that works so that the best and the brightest, you know, definitely can stay. And those that earn their visa credentials and so forth can stay, can work and be part of that. But, you know, at the southern border, they're running in left and right, almost no control whatsoever. It's been incredible for years and years. And then the ones that come over and go to our universities, earn their way
exactly
into the system, are told to leave. And it's killing us in terms of our brain drain, in terms of the resources that we've committed to that. And we've got to fix all that. And
We're lenient on
it's an easy fix.
Yes, it is. It is easy. It's maybe not super easy politically, but it is easy whereas other things are harder because it can take decades to get the education level up, to get the more people educated from an engineering standpoint and a science standpoint. That takes some time. And then also getting the other fields integrated so they understand how to apply it. I mean, that's good. We have some work to do, but we are lucky that we have a culture and a great university system that we can capitalize on that other countries, China, does not have.
Yeah. It's you know, again, like I said, it's a great time to be alive. More is going to be invented in the next 5-10 years in the history of mankind. We've got the greatest universities, greatest labs. We just need the regulations, the policies, and everything to make it easier to succeed. And so, you hear "Make America Great Again" every day, every night. Make America innovative again is just as important. And so
exactly,
that's going to lead to what makes us great. And so, you know, relax some of these ridiculous rules that went into place, over corrections for things that happened perhaps and never were changed back, to where we can make it easy for these incredibly bright, ambitious and good people that have earned PhDs in our system to stay here and earn their immigration credentials. That's going to change things probably as much as anything else. And we've got to change those kind of things. We've got to reinstore. People talk about, you know, kindergarten, K-12 in our schools and this, that, and the other. What if they had those fun shop classes, those fun home ec classes where, you know, I want to go to school. I'm making things. And so more and more, a lot of people, there are a lot of good people around the country that have this make stuff going on that really tangibilizes for the student that is studying and working hard and everything, that it actually results into something tangible. And that tangibility, to where you really feel like, you know, you're doing something with your education, with those academics while you're in school, motivates you to go to the next level, the next step. And I think there's a lot of good people working on that in the U.S. We just need to really focus on it and bring it to the other side, because, you know, we want to maintain our position worldwide as the leading nation, not only in our democratic, ideals and our values, but in the way that we operate the nation, because we can't suddenly find ourselves with a broken business model at the government level to
exactly
the extent that we can't compete against the Chinas and the Russias and so forth. We've got to be able to compete.
That's exactly what we have, is a broken business model that needs to be changed. And when you look at some of these industries that are just so top heavy, We don't have the money resources to invest in other things, because we're messing around investing in overhead and things that we shouldn't be investing in. But, you know, how can people learn more about your company? It's absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you. Nanomech, NANOMECH.com. It's all up there on the website. We are certainly, if not the leading, one of the world leading nanoscience companies, material science companies in the world. We're new. I wouldn't call us a startup at all. We're an emerging company, and it's great. This is, truly what is next, along with things like big data, with 3D printing and so forth. But most of that is embedded or backed or enabled
integrated
by nanoscience. Yeah. So
it's absolutely phenomenal. It's a new industrial age. The internet, this, it's just incredible.
Yeah, no, it's coming fast. And, you know, so you're going to see more and more. The universities all have nanoscience institutes, which will be interdisciplinary because it doesn't apply to just one thing, you know, and or one type of science. And
exactly.
They're going to build those up so that people can understand the incredible value potential of operating at this scale. And imagine if you couldn't operate at a scale of an inch, you know, only you could only build things at a scale of a yard. Well, this is a far bigger difference than that. You can imagine all the things that would have never been invented if we couldn't have, you know, scaled things at an inch.
Well, wait, this you is, can manipulate again, at the atom level to create different compounds, and it's so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're there now, and we have the tools, and we
it's
have
like
the
having the right. It's like having language. We have or math. It's like math for building. It's incredible.
Well, yeah, it's a whole new language.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. And I'm going to have your information up on the radio page so they can get hold of you. And I hope
sure.
you have a wonderful holiday and a great rest of the day.
Well, Sarah, you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We're delighted to be part of your program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We don't have enough time to air the full interview, but you can hear the full interview on podcast, on YouTube, or you can hear it on a Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Satellite Network that we also air on. I want to remind you to go to my website. You can see a lot more details on all the shows, all my past shows, and amazing things there. But I also want to remind you about how amazing this technology is, but we also have to look at it smart. We have to be smart. I'm glad we talked about some of the ethical implications that goes on with this technology without being fearful where we shut it all down. Because if you look at history and the lessons that we have hopefully have learned from history, is that when you completely shut off a technology like the printing press many countries did, they still are feeling the financial ramifications of doing that and not embracing the knowledge that it brings. Yet we can't be foolish and change the human genome forever or change the space-time continuum or something radical that we just don't understand. I mean, it's important that we understand what we're getting ourselves into before we permanently mess ourselves up, but to not embrace it, not dig into it, not unleash the potential and clear the roadblocks. I mean, our country has a lot of issues. Our country business model is flawed right now. Anybody who is a pretty wise business person can look at our business model and see that it's flawed. And in fact, I have a recent article by Gallup and the U.S. Competitive Council on my website that shows that we have not recovered from the last recession. And in fact, it's been 3 decades in the making, and it's because our country's business model is flawed and we need to fix it. It's really obvious for business leaders to see it, and we need to get past the politics and we need to fix the overhead problems in education and healthcare and housing. And in finance, I got to be honest, finance is really up there too. They don't bring it up in the Gallup report, but finance is an issue as well. So for now, I hope you go to my website at sarahwestall.com, and hopefully you can hear the rest of this amazing interview with Jim Phillips. Go to his website to learn more about his company. And I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and a great day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.